Hello and welcome to Inspire Me Today Radio. I'm your host, Gail Lynn Goodwin. Often, how we were raised religiously greatly influences the rest of our lives. There are so many different religions and so much to learn from each of the various authentic ones. Today's guest today is an English bookseller and a mystical writer whose distinctive approach owes as much to Eastern spirituality as it does to his Christian heritage. He was born in 1947 into a prosperous family, prominent in the fashion world of London, publishing between the wars. He grew up sheltered by privileged and immersed in a world of books. Then at the age of 17, he was strongly drawn to the profound teachings of a great Hindu sage, and a few years later, his life changed as he abandoned a promising journalistic career to follow the quest for truth, with a capital T, in India. His name is Philip Pegler, and he's here today to share his story with us. Philip, I am so honored to welcome you to Inspire Me Today Radio.
It's really nice of you to ask me, Gail. I feel privileged.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, as I was reading through your bio and your profile and your inspiration, that's when I said, I need to talk to this man. I want to hear the story of, seriously, how do you go from a prominent aristocratic British family to, hey, guys, I'm going to go to India and study with some sage? I mean, really, what was it like for you at that time?
Well, it is a sort of amazing turnaround, but that should be the case because I have to just correct you a little bit, because our family wasn't really an aristocratic family, but our family was a family of professionals. So my grandfather on my mother's side was a very creative bookseller. I beg your pardon, not a bookseller, a creative publisher in between the wars, between the First and Second World Wars, and he published some very notable authors, people like, for example, Somerset Maugham, Graham Greene. These are English writers. I don't know whether your audience knows these names. But anyway, he was very successful. And so my mother, his only daughter, grew up in this sort of atmosphere of books. And I guess she has communicated that to me. It's really come on through.
So it's genetic, huh?
I beg your pardon.
I said, so it sounds like it's genetic.
It sounds genetic, doesn't it? Yes.
Exactly. Well, right. So you grew up with this publishing background in your family. What made you say, you know, I'm not going to jump into this full-time career as a journalist, and instead, I think I'm going to go to India and sit at the foot of a mountain?
Well, I'd already completed my, what they call an indentureship, which actually a kind of apprenticeship. I worked as a reporter on a local paper, and I'd done 3 years at that. And then my brother's best friend was a jazz pianist working in London, and there was a book going the rounds of the musicians at the time. This was in the late 60s, I guess, probably 1966, 67. And my brother's best friend gave him a copy of this book, and he brought it home. And it was a book about the life of Ramana Maharshi, who was an Advaitic Hindu teacher. And both my brother and myself, we were both captivated, I would say, by the teaching and by the figure of Ramana Maharshi. He had this extraordinary quality of profound peace, which sort of shone out of his photographs and so on. So whatever happened, I don't know, but I was only 17, and it really, really took me. And after a couple of years, the wish to go more deeply into the teaching arose in me, and I was coming to the end of my indentureship, and I said, well, let me take a gap,
right,
and go off to India.
And when you did that, Philip, what was it like? Was it difficult when you shared with Mom and Dad that I'm going to go to India for a bit of time? Was that accepted?
Well, sadly, my mother had died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the previous year to when I went to India. So in a way, I would say that was a very sad event for me, because I was only I was only 21 at the time. But in a way, her passing set me free to do something which probably she might have opposed, because I think she, I'm guessing that she would have resisted me doing something like that. My father was also not, to be frank, he also wasn't very happy about it, but he kind of yielded, I would say, and let me go. But thereafter, my relationship with my father was a little bit uneasy, because he never quite understood why his boys were so interested in this Eastern spiritual teaching. He never really got it.
Did he ever read the book?
Oh, you mean the book about Ramana Maharshi? No, he didn't. I don't think he ever did, actually, to be honest.
That might have helped. I mean, it's what spurred you on. Exactly.
You know, at that age, one tends to try to, I don't know, be a bit headstrong and try to, not convert your father, but try to communicate your enthusiasm, and I'm not sure that I succeeded.
Well, that's all right. At least it made the impact on your life as it should, and set you on a path that now you're sharing these teachings and the things that you've learned.
That's right.
You know,
what
all
an
those years.
Thing. Yeah, amazing thing. Yeah.
And it's great to have that. But I've got to ask, I mean, you make it sound like it was easy. And I'm guessing that you had some major challenges, not only with that, but since then. So here's my question for you, Philip. How do you deal with adversity when it shows up in your life today?
Right. What happens is, really, I've learned over the years, the thing I've learned is to face life squarely, you know, to meet life, so to welcome whatever comes up. So when the challenges arise in life, as they do for everyone, and they certainly continue to do for me, I guess that over the years, I've developed my own unique way of meeting those challenges, not running away from life, but sort of meeting with courage, I would say, courage, sort of steadfast quality, of a tenacious sort of quality, where you meet everything. And there's something within oneself, there's this deeper quality within oneself that has the capacity to dissolve the problem. And I think it's like the difficulties are a doorway. And to begin with, the door is shut. And I guess you knock on that door, and if you knock with a steadfast determination, the door kind of opens. And so the difficulty, each difficulty we face, each challenge we face, each new turning in our life we face is a kind of doorway. And when we stay put and we take our seat in the middle of everything, in the center of our adversity, then kind of we go through that doorway, and the strength is, it comes to us to deal with whatever.
Absolutely.
We need to do.
I agree with you completely, but you learned at a young age that if you had a dream and if you wanted to do something, you went for it. I mean, you literally physically moved yourself to India to follow this path. And so what would you say to those folks that are listening today, Philip, that have a dream, whether it's moving across the country, moving to a different country, getting a new job, starting your own business, whatever it might be, but they're not doing it because they're too afraid?
Right. You know, what's important, I think, is to learn to trust your inner voice. Learn to trust your gut feeling, what your deepest feeling communicates to you. And actually, I don't like this expression, but I've heard this expression, and which is to follow your bliss. And I think that that's an expression that can be misunderstood, because it's not necessarily taking the easy path.
Of course.
It's following your heart, really. It's following your inner voice. It's following your conscience. And sometimes that conscience or that inner voice requires you to do what is a very hard thing to do. It means to maybe to go against the advice of your family, maybe to go against what appears to be the common sense of society, you know. And I think it's to do with having the courage of your convictions and following this inner instinct, something like that.
Now, I'm laughing when you said following common sense, because I have always been told, you know, why aren't you doing the commonsensical kind of thing? And it's just, when you have that voice inside of you telling you to do something, to me, it's common sense to follow that voice in spite of what other people might think.
I agree. I'm sorry, Gail. Yes,
no,
I agree,
please.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's right. It's just that this inner voice, as you know yourself, it's kind of quite subtle, isn't it? It's a quiet voice. It doesn't blurt things out. It's a sort of whisper.
Well, you know, in my experience, Philip, in my life, it starts as that quiet whisper. And if I say, oh, that's unrealistic, that's crazy, I can't do that, and I give this litany of reasons, it may be quiet for a short period of time, and then I'm going to hear it a little bit louder. And eventually, I either get shoved off the ledge that I was afraid to jump off of, or smacked over the head with a sledgehammer, that gets me back where I should have gone when I first heard it.
Right.
And so I guess I've gotten to the point that I pay much more attention now at 54 than I did back when I was a teenager or even in my 20s or 30s.
Right.
In that I've learned that it's there for a reason. Follow it, listen to it. And the funny thing is, I'm happiest and most fulfilled when I do.
Yeah, you've developed that sensitivity, haven't you, which, you know, young people, obviously, I mean, you meet young people who have this rare quality where that sensitivity is already developed, but most of us have to learn the hard way, I think, through the difficulties of life. I guess that's experience, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
there's got to be some benefit to getting older, right?
Yeah. Going back to your previous question, which I think is very relevant, when I went to India as a young man, it certainly was difficult. It was difficult adjusting to conditions in India, which were so very different, although I took to it very well, because I think the UK, Britain, with its relationship with the British Raj, there was a lot of Englishness there in India, so I kind of took to that. When I came home after nearly 4 years, I was there on and off for about 4 years. That was the difficulty, because I'd got used to the way of life in India and the spiritual atmosphere which was in India, and then coming back to the West and trying to adjust to secular life in England, that was really hard, and that took a good many years for me to hunker down and come to grips with things.
I can only imagine, because, I mean, at the time of, you know, the decade of when you came back in America, but especially in Britain, there was a lot going on then. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, it's like walking back from India into an Austin Powers movie. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Absolutely.
And I have to think that would almost be disjointed. Your brain is kind of firing, going, wait a minute, what's going on? Where's what has become my life? Where's the familiarity that I have and the grounding? So how did you manage to stay grounded?
Well, I don't think I did, to be honest, Gail. I went through a lot of ups and downs, and it's just by sticking with it that gradually the pendulum swings become less. And, you know, meditation for me was always very important, and to begin with, I was trying to do it by the force of my own willpower and not getting very far. And gradually, the capacity to meditate naturally came to me. And I think gradually the issues were kind of started to get resolved. But I had a lot of difficulties, and we haven't got time, I suppose, now in this conversation to go into all of it. But everybody has to go on their own road, and there's no easy answers, I don't think.
Well, I think the thing is, it didn't stop you. That's my takeaway, is that it doesn't matter if it's difficult. You still persisted. You kept going. You followed the dream. You brought the practices back, integrated them into your life, and you kept going and moving forward.
Yeah, you actually, I think you put into words the key, I mean the golden key. You know, just, this is what my dictum was, right, as things were going on, this difficult period, which lasted some years. I said, I started developing this sort of formula, whether it's easy or difficult, it doesn't make any difference. Easy or difficult,
You're right. You know, and yeah. Philip, I've gotten to the point in my life that whatever happens, it is what it is. And if I label it, oh my, that's difficult, guess what? It shows up difficult. And if I label it, wow, this is fun, this is easy, yeah, it shows up that way. And it's kind of like, I don't want to get to the end of my life and get to, you know, heaven or whatever you call it in your spiritual tradition and say, you're kidding me, it was really that easy. All I had to do is, it showed up how I believed it would. Do you know what I mean?
I do, absolutely. And then when we come to the end of our life, then you know there's no regrets, is there? Because you feel that, I think the most important thing when you come to the end of your life or to your closing years, you feel that you've done your utmost. I mean, that's really all that matters, that you feel that you've done all that you can. The rest you can kind of leave it to God, really.
Exactly.
Or leave it to Providence. Yeah.
And hopefully you had some fun along the way.
It's very important to keep a sense of humor, you know, not to get too grim-faced about the spiritual practice. It's not supposed to be a battlefield. You're not on the battlefield. It's not a war. You're not at war with yourself.
That's a good thing. Well, you made a comment in your Today's Brilliance that I'd like to read, and then I want you to talk about for a little bit. And you said, please remember always to be grateful, for gratitude is a great antidote to misfortune. I couldn't agree with you more, and I was cheering when I read this. So talk to us a little bit about that belief for you.
You know, to count your blessings, that's one expression. To count your blessings is to see the positive. You know, the Dalai Lama is someone who's helped to confirm me in this attitude, because he always says no matter how many difficulties he encounters with the Chinese, for example, he turns the problem around and looks at it from all directions to see what is the positive aspect here. Even when everything looks to be negative, let me see if I can look at this in a positive light. So counting your blessings is noticing how much there is to be thankful for, even when, on the face of it, there doesn't seem to be a great deal to be thankful for.
It's a brilliant way to look at life, and I have to think that it takes any situation and turns it around.
What I wanted to add there is, you know, obviously life can be really, really hard, and depending on what one's surroundings and conditions and circumstances are, you know, I think of people who are in prison and people in all sorts of very hard hospital, all sorts of difficult circumstances, but all around us, there are refreshing elements to be found in the smallest details, you know, whether it's refreshment from nature or, you know, the refreshment that comes from reading a book that touches you. There are always refreshing elements to be noticed, even in the midst of, a really difficult circumstance.
It reminds me, Philip, of when I walk through nature and I'll be like on a rocky ledge and it's solid rock, and through the middle of the rock is growing a beautiful flower.
Yeah.
And I always pause and say, wow, in the midst of this barren nothingness, look, how did this happen? How did this get here? And it's a reminder for me that in my life, when I'm at one of those low points of things aren't happening exactly the way you want them to, focus on the flowers, focus on what is happening that is right. And it always turns things around.
Yeah, it's enough, isn't it, to see this little beautiful flower on this rocky ledge and to say, how on earth did you get there?
Exactly.
And, yeah, that's right.
Well,
yeah,
Philip,
I agree with you.
Through your writing and speaking, you inspire so many people. Who or what inspires you?
You know, I think the teachings that I've taken refuge in, these spiritual teachings which I've imbibed, and when you, it's like, you know, we become the food we eat, don't we? If we have a wholesome, nourishing diet, then our body is more healthy. And in the same way, if you, what we imbibe, what we take into ourselves, nutrition is not only in the food, nutrition is also in communication. Nutrition, nourishment comes from the media, nourishment comes from books, nourishment comes from music, from other people. And I think that after a while, you develop a taste for truly nourishing food so that you become more discerning in the kind of nutriment that you ingest. So you avoid the toxins. So I don't watch too much television. I don't read books that do not uplift me, or rather, you know, only a little bit. So I don't read too much in the newspapers. A little bit of moderation there.
So you surround yourself with things that take you where you choose to be.
That's right. And I think that's where discernment comes in. Because, you know, like when we're hungry and we sit down to have a meal, and then we eat until we're satisfied and then we know we've had enough. In the same way with all these different forms of communication, you need to know how much to have in order to remain in balance. So if I read too much, I don't feel so good. If I listen to too much music, I don't feel so good. So it's kind of a balancing act.
Exactly. Well, this is all really, really good stuff. And I'm very grateful to you for taking the time today, Philip, to be with our listeners. The insights that you shared in your Today's Brilliance, again, were why I said, I love this man. I needed to talk to him. So going back to that, and also going deep inside, if you were to summarize your greatest wisdom, what have you learned that you'd want to pass on to others right here, right now?
You know, everybody within themselves, there's a core of goodness within all human beings. There's a core of goodness within all human beings. Sometimes it's buried very deep inside. Sometimes it's near the surface. When we learn to touch this inmost core, it's our beingness, the quality of our beingness. This releases within one the healing that we need. So really the question is, how can I follow my inner voice in such a way that it will lead me to that place within myself where the source of healing within myself, the fountain of healing within myself, because it isn't far away on a distant cloud. It's within ourselves that the nourishment comes from within ourselves. And the answers to all these knotty problems also come from oneself. I just wanted to make one mention, if I may.
Please.
I hope you don't mind, of the book that I've just completed.
Oh, not at all. I want you to brag about it, because if you don't, we will. How's that?
Okay. It's just that so much of what I'm trying to communicate to listeners today comes from a lady who was a mystical poet in my youth. She was a mentor to me, and a lot of the teachings that I'm endeavoring to communicate, which is especially this last point about touching the core of goodness within oneself, this really comes from her. And the teaching is contained in the book that I've just written called Hidden Beauty of the Commonplace. So if anybody wanted to brush up on some of the things I've said, they'd probably find it there.
Well, this is excellent, Philip, and what we'll do to make this easy, our listeners listen to these podcasts, whether they're at the gym, whether they're driving, running, whatever. So we just ask them to come on back to inspiremetoday.com, go to the Browse Luminary section, and just put in Philip's name, Philip Pegler, with a P, and we'll make sure to put the links directly right there on your profile page, Philip, so that they'll be able to connect to you, buy your book, and learn more about these amazing teachings that you're sharing with us today.
Thank you very much, Gail. That's really beautiful to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, I still have a couple more questions for you.
You carry on. I'm happy to talk.
This is probably my favorite question that I've asked each and every one of our luminaries, from as young as 6 to as old as 104. So the question is this, Philip. If you had just one more thing that you could accomplish or experience in your lifetime, what would it be?
Good question. I think to be able to talk to people about what means the most to oneself, I think that is already one of the greatest accomplishments, to be able to talk about the love that, in a sense, one has found and which sustains one. I think to be able to communicate that is a great privilege. But there was a very cheeky sort of thought that came to me, which I would share with you, and that is that although I'm interested in all these things, I still like fast cars. And
I love it.
Yeah, I haven't yet got a fast car, so I would like to have a sports car before I get too old to drive it.
Oh, so what kind is it going to be?
Well, probably an older kind of car from the 1960s I was growing up.
You know,
when
Philip,
I couldn't afford to buy one then.
You live in the UK, so just go see Q.
I beg your pardon?
I said you live in the United Kingdom, in the UK. So you could just go see Q.
See Q?
Oh, come on. 007. He makes the coolest cars, remember?
Well, you're absolutely right. Well, that's the sort of car I'd like, I think, an Aston Martin.
It's exactly right. What I was thinking for you.
Yeah.
So just get Q to hook you up. He always has the coolest cars with the greatest accessories.
That's right. I would just say that I have had the opportunity of driving one of these because my father had one for a brief while when I was growing up.
Excellent.
So I got a taste for it then, I think.
Well, I will go celebrate it in advance, and I'm sure it will show up in your life very quickly.
Okay.
Well, thank you again, Philip. I greatly appreciate your being here. And again, to our listeners, you can find out more about today's luminary, Philip Pegler, just by going to inspiremetoday.com, click on the tab that says Browse Luminaries, and there you'll find his written inspiration, as well as his bio, his other information, and where to buy his brand new book. So, Philip, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Gail.
You are most welcome. And to our listeners, thank you for spending part of your day with us. Come on back again next week. We'll bring you inspiration from another incredible luminary. And until then, remember, it's only when you have the courage to step off the ledge that you'll realize you've had wings all along. We love you. We're here for you. We'll see you again tomorrow. And thanks again for stopping by.